Good evening. Welcome to the June 17th, 25, Planning Commission meeting, City of Morro Bay. We have a quorum, and so I'd like to bring the meeting officially to order. And we will start with a moment of silence. Thank you. And then Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, republic for which it stands, one nation, God, liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any planning commissioner announcements?
I have an announcement to make. My family and I have recently decided to move to Los Osos. So I'm very sad to say that tonight will be my last night planning commission, where I'll be back to bother all of you. Los Osos is very much impacted by everything that goes on here in Morro Bay. And of course, my husband's business functions out of Morro Bay still, and our lives are here. But as a non-resident, I'll now be just a participant from the crowd. So I wanted to say thank you all, both from the audience and from up here. I have learned so much in the past 4 years, especially to Eric and Joe and our director. And I just have learned an immense amount and grown an immense amount. And I really hope that I've been able to serve the city in a way that's been beneficial. My only parting words is just to say that I really urge you as the commission and as residents and council, I really urge you to continue your work in a way that thinks about generations, that thinks about my generation, Gen Z, and our kids' generation, and what our city's going to look like when they're the ones with their faces in the newspapers graduating from Morro Bay High. My kids will go to Morro Bay High, and when they're the ones at Cal Poly, graduating from Cal Poly, how can we plan a city that benefits them, not just us who are here now? So thank you all for the opportunity to serve you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your perspective, always aiming at families in the future. So we have previous agenda minutes to approve. Is there any comments about those minutes? Those are the minutes of, hold on 1 second. May 20th, 25.
I motion to approve the minutes from May 20.
Sorry, I have a comment, and it's on item C1, where a member of the public commented, Betty Winholtz commented, but the community development director did respond, and there's no mention of the community development director responding to her questions, and I'm not certain whether that probably should be included in the minutes. I'll defer to you, Erlen.
Yeah, so we'll note that in the final version of the minutes that I provided a response.
Okay.
To meeting member.
So then a motion with as amended. Is that you're making a motion as amended?
I motion to approve the minutes as amended.
Okay, and a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, 5-0. Next up, we have our I forgot to ask for the members of the public if there's any questions or comments not on tonight's agenda. Now's the time to come forward for those.
Thank you. I was wondering when we were going to hit that public comment. Good evening, Commissioners. Carla Wixom, Morro Bay Mayor. I just wanted to take this opportunity this evening to thank Asia and acknowledge her dedicated service to this community. I appreciate your commitment and your involvement and your participation and all the things that you have brought to the table, which have been vast, and the reminder that we have future generations that'll be coming and the importance of those planning. So thank you. I wish you the best in your endeavor and your move over to Los Osos and look forward to seeing you. Thank you for your service.
Anyone else with this? Jeff.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Jeff Eccles, resident of Morro Bay and a city council member. I'm going to follow up with what the mayor said. It's been a pleasure watching Asia over the last couple of years come into her voice. And I also want to thank you for your service to the city. My kids, I have twins. They're 21 years old, graduated from Morro Bay High. I'm an old man with gray hair now. You're kind of in the middle. So I think we've got the entire spectrum of generations covered. But thank you for that encouragement for us to always be a forward-thinking city. So important. And thank you for your service to the city of Morro Bay. We hope to see you on a very often basis. Thank you.
And then anybody else would like to speak on an item which is not on tonight's agenda?
Hello, how are you? My name is Somas Nagash. I'm a pharmacist at California Men's Colony, and I am a resident homeowner in Morro Bay. And I am here today to speak about the Bonita station that's being built or is maybe remodeled. Wanted to talk about the Bonita station on Bonita Street is what I'm here about. So just a little history. It was built in 1950, and it was staffed until 1970. And so the fire department moved to a newer station near Albertsons. And they received in 2007 grant money to upgrade their garage apparatus. And after this remodeling, it never got staffed. And so the station was never staffed due to the lack of funding, leaving the building to deteriorate by failing to be maintenanced. So basically, when it's not your money or your property, you don't take care of it. That's basically how I see it. Well, now they're back and they want to either remodel or do construction. There was three options on the table. And option A was to remodel the existing facility, which to me seemed like the most fiscally responsible option, considering it's already there and all they have to do is remodel the inside. Option B is a two-story building, which would be about 4 feet taller than the garage apparatus. Seems like the most expensive option. And then option C is somewhere in between, which is a single-story building. So I'm here to talk about choosing the most fiscally responsible option for our community, considering that we are in a deficit and we may not be getting raises, and we need to remember that when we start doing things like this, there's tax assessments, and we have to consider that as well. Also, we have to consider that the building that is two stories is going to be $2.5 million, and this is for a second a fire department station that's going to be staffed by two or three or four firemen. And basically, it's for a population of 10,500 residents. And normally, that would be one station for that kind of population. And I totally understand that they want a station on the north side, and I'm all for it, so we can provide for our residents who are elderly and they want a response time right away. So wouldn't it be more of an increase of response time if we had a single-story building? Basically, they don't have to come down a pool or run downstairs. They would be right there by their fire trucks. So that would increase response time and also safety for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Somas. Anybody else here that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? AGP, do we have anybody with raised hands?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'm closing public comment on that then. We're moving right into item number one, which is regarding the PG&E lighting replacement on the Embarcadero. Maybe staff, do you have a response before we get to that? To any items on the, from the public, is there any comment?
Sure. So I did have a chance to speak with Solmaz before the meeting started about the her comments regarding the fire station. So I need to work with the fire chief to kind of understand exactly where that project is in the process. I know it's not yet to the permitting stage of the process, which is normally when my department and the planning commission potentially would be involved. As I mentioned to Ms. Solmaz, I'm happy to meet with her and just understand the situation better from her perspective. I also need to meet with the fire chief and get a better understanding of where that project is in the process so I can know what type of permit it may require and what the public process would be for that permit. So, thank you. My only comments at this point.
Okay, Lee, back to the PG&E lighting, and welcome.
Yeah, so I'm going to start off this item. So, first, this isn't the type of item that we normally would bring to the Planning Commission. This isn't something that's, you know, statutorily required by our zoning code or general plan to bring to the Planning Commission. It is just an opportunity for the city with PG&E reaching out to us and notifying us that they are able to replace the lighting fixtures on the Embarcadero and the Cloisters. Harbor Director Chris Munson and I kind of discussed, should we make this decision at the staff level or bring it to the advisory boards? And we thought it would be a good opportunity to get input from the Harbor Advisory Board and also the Planning Commission on the design of the lighting fixtures. So I'm going to let our planning intern, Lee Ackerman, make the presentation, but I also wanted to introduce Lee, since this is their first time presenting to the Planning Commission. Lee actually started with the Community Development Department just about 1 month after I started, so they've been here almost a year, and they are an extraordinary intern. They are helping the public out at the front counter almost every day. Very knowledgeable. We're really lucky to have him on the team, and just happy to pass it over to Lee to give the presentation.
Thank you, Erlyn, and hello, members of the commission and members of the public. This is hearing item C1 on PG&E's replacement of lighting along the Embarcadero and in the Cloisters neighborhoods. So just for a little background, these lighting fixtures are owned by PG&E, and according to PG&E, were originally installed in 2013. Chris Munson reached out to PG&E as we've had complaints about unlit bulbs and paint wearing off and the yellowing panes, as you can see in the image here. Oops, I might have missed a slide. How do I go backwards? Sorry, I missed a slide. Here's the location of the lighting fixtures in the map provided by PG&E. You can see along the Embarcadero and on Front Street, along the waterfront, and then by the on Coleman Drive by Mora Rock, and then in the Cloisters neighborhood on in the Emerald and Indigo circles. There we go.
We're having a technical difficulty here with the presentation.
Oh, there we go. Maybe that'll work. Okay, so here are the existing fixtures. We have Salem style on Embarcadero and Front Street by the waterfront and in the Cloisters neighborhoods. And then we have the overhanging pendant style fixtures by Mora Rock. And then here are the proposed styles provided by PG&E for us to select from. There's Granville Premier, Granville Classic, Contempo, Arlington, and Coach Lantern. And according to PG&E, these are all dark sky compliant. And in terms of wattage and color temperature, we have a bit of some range to select from, and we'll also seek input from Planning Commission. And just for reference, this is the range of color temperature in Kelvin, and I believe the fixtures range from 2,700 to 5,000 K in terms of what we can select from. So action for you all is to provide staff with recommendation on the lighting fixtures and guidance on brightness and color temperature.
Do you guys have any questions for Lee or Erlen? Go ahead.
I know we had a little bit of public back via email and correspondence, but have you guys received additional comments or thoughts from nearby residents or business owners, clearly those that are functioning in the evening, or from the chamber comments?
So the only comments we received were the emails that were sent directly to the Planning Commission.
Along those lines, I don't know, is there a an HOA associated with the Cloisters? Okay, there is. We received only a single letter from the Cloisters, and I hate to make one letter represent an entire neighborhood, but I think it would be, as when we drove around the neighborhoods, well, I'll get to that in my comments later. It's not really a question. That was mostly my question.
Is each one of these fixtures capable of being within that range that you presented on the slide before?
Yes, I believe the range for all of them is definitely, there's 2,700 K, 3,000 K, and 4,000 K. And then I believe, I have it, you can look in the packets, there a certain, I don't remember off the top of my head which ones, but some I believe can go up to 5,000. I don't think that would be dark sky compliant though, so.
And are those adjustable or are they fixed at that level?
They're typically fixed once they're installed.
Do we have any idea out of the five options which are considered to be the easiest to maintain?
I can jump in there. So they're all, when we got some comments back from the Harbor Advisory Board, one of their preferences was the Contempo one, but that was based primarily on that it was more resistant. Looking into the different materials, they're all kind of an aluminum alloy with a durable paint on the outside. And I asked the PG&E representatives if one lasts more than the others, and he said, really, really no.
Okay.
I did want to clarify that the original model is shown, there is an LED equivalent of those as well, so we do have the option of just getting the same ones, but just the LED equivalent as well. So I think the Acorn, or the Pennant style, out by Morrow Rock, there's only about five of them, but that would be the only option that we could do for those. So this is mainly for the Embarcadero and the Cloisters area.
Right, yep. That hangs over. Okay. That's all I got.
So am I correct in that the pendant style could not be used on the Embarcadero unless we replace the poles as well?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And sorry, in the packet, I thought it said that only 3, 4, and 5 were dark sky compliant, but you're saying actually all of them are.
I had called PG&E specifically to ask that question, and they said all of them are dark sky compliant, because that was one of our, I knew that question was probably going to come up.
Okay.
We did have a letter from the public wondering about how wildlife or perhaps the aquatic life might be affected by the light. And as I wandered around the Embarcadero, I noticed that there are several of these fixtures along the Harper Walk, immediately over the water in some cases, or adjacent to. Any comments from you guys as to any feedback on your part, especially perhaps you, Chris, Harper Director, is that your title? Yeah. Any feedback on that subject?
I know in places like in the South, they're more focused on that. Like they'll have orange lights for sea turtles. I haven't seen any usage of those type of lights up and down the coast, but there is definitely some sensitivity towards lights and the marine mammals, but these ones will be an improvement over those, because with LEDs they focus down. So for example, with the panes that are on many of them, you would think that, oh, well, that's shielding the light a bit, but it actually says with one of the models that the only way that it is dark sky compliant is without the panes. So it's actually diffusing and scattering the light more. So most of these lights, where they don't have an enclosure around them, they're focusing the light down. And what you can't see in some of those pictures is that it looks like the top of them is translucent, but it's actually opaque. So like number one and number two, the tops of those there's actually a white opaque bulb on top of it that's blocking the light from going up. So it may not look like it, but it is pushing the light down a bit more. And I would assume some do it better than others out of the ones chosen, but at least according to the PG&E representative, they're all dark sky compliant.
And sorry, could you clarify which one is already in the cloisters and whether or not they're all going to be replaced there, or just some will be replaced?
PG&E has said that all will be replaced, and I think it's 99 in total for all of the Embarcadero and in the cloisters. I don't have a specific number for how many are in the cloisters.
But we're not like recommending some while others still exist. It's a full neighborhood replacement.
I believe so, yeah. And just to clarify, in the cloisters neighborhood, it is the Salem style.
So another one from me. As I drove around, I noticed in some locations in the cloisters and also in some less frequently on the Embarcadero, there occasionally I would see a black side to one of the lamps. Specifically, I saw a black side facing, in other words, solid black, facing a residence in the cloisters in several locations. And in one location across from Franklin and Lola's, the entire lamp was painted black. Any feedback as to why that was? That something at the request of an owner, or do we know? Or a local resident, maybe?
That we don't know, but I do know PG&E does make modifications occasionally based on users. For example, on light poles, whenever you see, or not light poles, transmission lines, whenever you see the wooden crossbars and you see one that's sticking up, you'll see a little pennant sticking up. That's where a bird crossed phase and lost its life. They had to, as a mitigation, they had to put a little post on top to prevent the next bird from doing it. So they do make modifications over time to kind of mitigate. So somebody probably made a complaint. That would be my guess.
And then also, I'm presuming, because of the way the photos looked, that these are opaque. The ones, for instance, the Salem style or the Coach style, have opaque, or rather translucent, transparent, completely see-through glass, whereas, for instance, on the right, it's more of a frosted glass looking, whereas our existing fixtures in town seem to have a frosted glass of some sort. So can we confirm that these indeed are clear, or are they frosted? Do we know?
So there is the option with the, on the next slide, the option five, I believe. That one's similar to the Salem style, and that has the option for panes. But once you add the panes, they're not dark sky compliant. So, and even though it looks like they're clear, there's actually no panes at all. So downtown, or on the Embarcadero right now, we have kind of a mishmash of different styles of the Salem. Some of them have panes, some of them don't. And yeah, but they're all not looking that great. So yeah, we're hoping to replace them.
I'm sorry, I have a million questions. The next question is not so much around the lamps as it is, and I know we're not really discussing posts tonight, but there's a few, if you wander around, most of the posts are standard height, and in some locations they deviate, for instance, in front of GAFCO, the Great American Fish Company, and the Harbor Rat, because there's a pile, like a concrete pylon beneath them there, about maybe 42 inches taller in those locations. But occasionally, in other locations, there's a random high one. And I'm sort of suspecting that that was because a car ran into it and it got replaced with a random pole. But I presume, or I would like to make sure that we keep the heights the same in a given neighborhood. We don't have one, for instance, in front of the Dutchman. There's ones about 4 feet taller than all the others, and it just looks like an odd duck. And so I just, if Public Works is tracking this, that's something I think we would like. We'll talk about it perhaps later. I guess we've moved into comments already. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, my last question is whether or not the residents in Cloisters received notices of a decision or of PG&E. Yes.
So to my knowledge, I can tell you that our department did not send out notices. It's not a public hearing. Again, this isn't something that's legally required to go before the Planning Commission. So there were some Cloister members who are part of the, you know, Planning Commission notification, so they received the notice that this is on the agenda, but there were no notices sent out to property owners in the Cloisters.
But I assume that between now and this, an item that City Council will see, or no?
So, no, this will not go to the City Council.
Okay.
Well, I think we'll open it up to any more presentations? Are we ready for public comments? Or
I just wanted to make a clarification on the post height. So right now they're just doing the luminaire sections. Our local representative is actually looking into replacing the poles or refurbishing them as well. And I did bring up that question about the different heights, and they have lighting engineers that can look into that, and so I'm requesting that they can look into that, because I have noticed that there are some that are abnormally high, and it'd be nice to get them all kind of on the same level.
Well, then, public comment, public questions on this? Anyone like to speak on this?
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Eccles. I'm speaking to you as a resident of North Morro Bay right now, not as a council member. And I'm also speaking to you as a mariner, having delivered dozens and dozens of boats with my 100-ton master's license, my captain's license issued through the United States Coast Guard, in and out of our harbor as well as Ventura Harbor. And I watched the Harbor Advisory Board meeting. I wasn't able to attend, but I watched that meeting, and I was sitting here thinking about the discussion tonight and the discussion at the HAB meeting. I'd never heard the Coast Guard brought up. So I would encourage staff or this body to recommend that the Coast Guard is consulted in terms of the lighting. I can tell you that when delivering a boat at nighttime into Ventura, it is tough. You know, in boating, we've got red lights, white lights, and green lights. And when you go into Ventura, there are really bright white lights, and then there are actually traffic signals that go from red to green. And if you haven't been in that harbor at nighttime previously, it can be a challenging harbor. So I've also been informed that the light stanchions or poles that are closest to the rock, on the south side of the rock, to the water, haven't been functioning for some time. And if we replace those with lights that might be an impediment to navigation, that could be problematic. So I would just encourage that the Coast Guard be consulted in terms of navigable effects. Thank you.
Any other public comments or questions? Do we have any raised hands online? AGP?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners.
One comment is remembering last Halloween when there were a great number of pedestrians and vehicles on the Embarcadero. I came to the conclusion, was aware that I thought the illumination, it was too dark, that the Embarcadero needed more light for safety reasons. So I'm pleased that we're thinking about new fixtures, and I do remember reading something about, even though it would still be dark sky, we might be bringing up the illumination so it would be a little bit brighter at night. The thing is, I'm sure my wife finds it amusing that I, of all people, are being asked to express an opinion on lamp fixtures. I've formulated some opinions about all five of them. Do you want me to just voice my opinions on that, or
how about we go? Because I kind of wanted to talk more about less about the in two phases. The second half was the idea of the design of the individual fixtures, but the first half was more about brightness or okay. locations or issues like the poles or. Like for me, it's stickers on the poles, and there may be other people have other issues, but maybe break it up into two different sections. Was that so?
Sure. So again, just to repeat that I think the Embarcadero could use a little bit more light at night, and I would certainly be in favor of poles being replaced where they're needed. It strikes me this would be probably an efficient time to do it.
It's a hard balance, I think, in neighborhoods between having bright streetlights that give a feeling of safety, especially as a woman walking at night or in the winter when the sun goes down early. A lot of people walk through cloisters and those paths, but you don't want something too bright that it's going to shine into everyone's houses. So just something to consider. I feel like the dark sky part is really important. The impact on environmental stuff on mammals or sea creatures is really important. And then just on consistency throughout the Cloisters neighborhood and throughout the Embarcadero would be my priority, making sure they don't have to have the same design, but making sure that there's consistency and match with the feel. And I know that the packet had some descriptions on how those decisions are made, even if we're not held to some of the standards that are in the Cloisters area plan and the Embarcadero old waterfront plan. But I thought they were really good guides, so thanks for including those.
Tony, Mary?
So once PG&E installs the fixtures, the city's responsible for maintaining them. Is that correct?
No, they will be still PG&E's responsibility.
Okay. Same within the Cloisters?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, I put together some like a weighted prioritization framework for consideration for our decision-making process, just for your guys' thoughts. So for me, with Councilmember Eccles' comments, I think safety of navigation and safe boating is to me of the utmost importance. Second is prioritization of impact to wildlife. We are an estuary, and I know that with a transition to LEDs as part of this scope, LEDs emit more blue light with short wavelengths, which scatters more and is more disruptive to nocturnal wildlife. So I think that should definitely be something we look into as part of this. Third for me was cost of maintenance and understanding the expected lifetime for the lampposts, because even if PG&E is responsible for maintaining, it obviously takes staff time when we need to replace these. Fourth would be prioritization of timelessness and consistency throughout town. And the ability to replace any existing broken lights, for example, is number five, a more timeless design that is more likely to have backstock than other options here. And fifth would be prioritizing alignment with the fishing village character as specified within the downtown waterfront strategic plan, which provides us a framework for the general design guidelines, as well as how closely the design aligns to Cloisters' vision and the images that were shared on that with staff. So I would, just as part of process, recommend that we discuss whether we're aligned on weighting consideration of those different factors, and then from there, potentially discussing whether we'd be able to immediately remove some of these from consideration based on those factors.
My own comments are, I think that if I lived in a neighborhood and I had a particular streetlight style and suddenly they got changed to a different style, it might be unnerving to some folks. And so I would tend to want to stay with an existing pattern in an existing neighborhood. That's my own belief. So the Cloisters, particularly, I'm talking about, not the Embarcadero. The Embarcadero is sort of everybody's neighborhood. The Cloisters is those owners' neighborhood more than anyone's. And so there, I would think that we would probably want to stay with the existing pattern, whereas in the on the Embarcadero, I think it's open for discussion and suggestions and maybe back and forth with the harbor folks. And I don't think we got a particular direction from them because it's kind of one of two or three, as I understood it. Am I hearing that right, sort of?
So they had voted on, and again, this was just a recommendation. It was the Contempo one, the number three one. And that was...
But prior, as you mentioned before, prior to understanding the dark sky compliance of all of them.
Yeah, so their recommendation was for something that was rugged and that would be durable, but they're all roughly made of the same materials. And they also wanted something that pointed the light downward. And so all of them kind of meet that requirement. So, it's their recommendation, but again, you don't need to, you don't have to agree with their decision.
So the other points I brought up earlier about the poles, we might want to talk about that in a second too, but the areas along the rock where Jeff brought up the navigation. There's a lot of lighting styles that are different than these in our town. There's little bollards down there at Tidelands Park that are, 42 inches tall and about a foot in diameter, and they shed light just down. There's no sideways viewing, and there's in between Rose's Landing and across the street, sort of from the chessboard at the end of essentially the end of Front Street there, where Front hits the water. There's a unique post. There's a post that looks like a piling, and there's a little lamp off of the piling. I think that one, and maybe at the top of the Centennial Staircase, there's a post. And that area, because it's scheduled to be a park, I'm wondering if that post is going to be staying the same, and or is that post, I presume it's going to be staying the same because it's not got the base. I'm going off on a tangent. I'm going to let that one go. The other thing I noticed is that all the street furniture, planner wonky term, the street furniture in town is primarily galvanized, and these are the only black things that are floating around other than those bollards that I spoke about. And so I have a question, is black our only option, or because these are cast aluminum, perhaps galvanized steel isn't an option? I noticed most of the posts which are doing the best in town are galvanized steel, and the galvanized steel that has been painted black, the paint has been coming off, but the pure just galvanized steel all by itself has been doing fine. There's a few, I don't know whether they're fiberglass or whether they're some other plastic, but there's a couple of them which are actually plastic. Those didn't seem to be behaving as well as the galvanized either. So it is an ocean-faring town. We constantly have a saltwater effect on everything aluminum, everything, if it's not anodized heavily, it starts corroding, and I'm kind of questioning the aluminum poles. I'm also questioning the fact that there seems to be a lot of stickers on a lot of these poles. Kids love to slap stickers on things, and a lot of the poles have stickers on them, and when you go to scrape off the sticker, you scrape off the black paint, but when they scrape the stickers off the galvanized poles, the galvanized pole is just still galvanized. And I realize we're kind of getting into the weeds. I don't even know whether some of these things are available to talk about with PG&E, but in my own case, I would be voting for, if it was just me, if I was king, I would be saying we wanted galvanized poles, but I'm not king, so I have to hear from all the people here, and we get to decide as a democracy. Any thoughts on the galvanized versus black?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at the metal grating down by the docks and the guardrails and handrails, it's all galvanized. And I mean, we have seagulls that sit on things and do what they do. And it's going to show up a lot more on black paint than it is on a silver white paint. So even if the fixtures can't be maintained as frequently as needed, I think that something that's lighter in color as opposed to black is going to be easier to maintain and look cleaner. But as long as the pole matches fixture, right?
Mr. Chair, if it helps with the commission deliberation, so the kind of outcome we're hoping to have from this discussion is to you see if there is a consensus from the commission on which of the proposed styles you prefer. I think if you have additional comments, such as, you know, the finish being galvanized instead of black, we can pass those comments on to PG&E, and if they have any type of product that can kind of accomplish that, we'll work with them to see if they can provide that. But I think just to kind of keep the conversation focused, I think the main goal is which style, and then any other comments you want to make, we'll take those back to PG&E and see if we can accomplish that for the commission, recognizing there will be some limitations.
That's good advice. Thank you, Arlen. So the discussion around birds and guano on the fixtures, some of them, in my opinion, might behave better with birds than others. Any feelings one way or the other there? No? I want to start the discussion around the design then. Joe?
I'll try and be. Example one strikes me as, and again, I don't have strong opinions on any of these things, but I will say example one looks to me to be somewhat urban, perhaps not quite as in keeping with Morro Bay. Example two looks a little too ornate for my taste. Three looks very utilitarian, modern, commonplace, the kind of thing you might typically see in a large retail parking lot. Four, suggesting small town 19th century look to Main Streets, but a little bit perhaps overdone. So my vote would probably be for five. That sort of evokes, again, simpler time, a smaller, less complex environment, and frankly, the population is familiar with it because it looks like what we have now. So that would be my vote, such as it.
As far as the Cloisters area goes, I think the comment about keeping with what's thing and not having, without more input from the community, without not changing anything drastically is probably a good idea. So if the coach, with number five, sounds like is closest to that design, being the dark sky, the warmer lighting, number five would be great. And then for the Embarcadero, I have to agree with Joe's assessment, except I kind of like number one, but I agree, like consistent. And the point about birds is really smart, so I would take that back to PG&E and say, is there an option to do maybe number five in galvanized steel or something that is a lighter in color?
I would prefer number three, assuming that the post is going to be replaced and match the fixture, so we don't have a black post with a grayish, whitish fixture on top.
To me, in keeping with the feedback that we got from the community in terms of downlighting, that rules out one and two for me. I think four is overdone stylistically, and so that leaves for me between three and five. I think five is kind of the most classic design in keeping with our city's design guidelines. It matches with what Cloisters has in their vision imagery. I think it is like an upgrade of what the city's already used to. And so for me, I think it also seems like timeless, like something we would be able to replace and would likely be in stock. So I prefer five for Embarcadero and Cloisters.
Okay, and with respect to, I also I like five as well. I know that in town they do look like what we have on number five, although I believe there's a little cylinder on the very top, like a little chimney on most of ours. I did see one within the in the staff report, page two in the background area, says Salem style. And I just want to make sure that the Salem style, is Coach very similar to Salem, but they're different. I did see a few Salems. There's about three or four Salems around town. There's about 97 coaches. So I just wanted to make sure that when we're talking about number five, we're not accidentally talking about the Salem. We are indeed talking about that image in number five. Number three, I tend to agree with Joe, looks a little bit too much like going to this, I don't know, the DMV. I'm not a big fan of that one. Sorry, Tony. With respect to color, I agree with everything that the Harbor Commission said and with what you guys said. I think keeping it as warm as possible, I would say 2,700 would be the number I would suggest. I don't, unless you have different feelings, everybody agree on that. And then with respect to intensity, I tend to want to defer to like I've heard backwards and forwards on this. I heard from one person in Cloisters that they wanted to see a little bit dimmer, but that's one person. And in other communities, I've seen, you know, people who walk at night, especially young women in general, the light makes them feel safer, and so more light is better. This is a discussion a lot, and so I tend to want to stay with at least with what we have at the Cloisters, whatever the intensity is at the Cloisters now. I think we should probably just emulate. And that, because I haven't heard, unless the community's heard differently or if the city's heard differently from that community and has had complaints in one direction or the other, I see no reason to change the intensity. But I'm open to discussion on that subject. No, you're all feel the same thing about that over there in Cloisters?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if there's a standard for like four neighborhoods during that, whatever's put in is those standards, and maybe the standards for updated practices on around safety without being bright white light, something warmer light. But if you guys could inform that decision based on what are like best practices in urban design today for neighborhoods.
So even though Cloisters is a residential neighborhood, street lights are still exempt from the lumen, the brightness limitations. I think the safe bet for Cloisters would most likely be to just go ahead and go with the, you know, continuing the existing intensity of the lights.
Then on the waterfront, I sort of see the waterfront is split along the Embarcadero where the cars and pedestrians are walking, and then along the Harbor Walk. And I think perhaps we should consider intensity differences in those locations, but I'm open to suggestions. I know you have a lot of experience in this area, at least more than the rest of us, perhaps, being involved in naval matters. And am I asking too much of you there to lead off?
I mean, I've experienced what it's like to pull into a harbor at night. I have a cousin who studies the impacts of LEDs on wildlife as his job, so I hear about it at the Thanksgiving table. But I think it's a place where I'd recommend that potentially we get the estuary programs involved and seek feedback from experts or encourage PG&E potentially to work with experts on that. It seems important just given our, just where we are and all the wildlife and otters and stuff that like to hang out right alongside there.
Yeah, I've just got one last comment. I don't think we should be treating the Embarcadero the same as the Cloisters and vice versa. So I do agree that keeping with what's there, just replacing things so it's consistently. So that's all I got.
It sounds like we have sort of the idea of asking for maybe professional advice with respect to the interface with wildlife and with the maritime folks specifically out there by the rock and maybe along the entrance to the water, well around the PG&E, I still call it PG&E, the Vistra property. And then with respect to, you've had comments from the Harbor Advisory Board about increasing the lighting along, I'm presuming it's along the Embarcadero right of way. Am I correct, or was it also along the Harbor Walk?
It was mainly focused on the Embarcadero area, and we did hear a comment about over by the rock, too, which I think Councilmember Eccles brought up, that those, if they're on, they can be bright. So I guess the consensus I had heard was cloisters keep it the same, by the rock, lower it, and then Embarcadero, slightly brighter.
Well, I think that we've come to the conclusion that number five is the one that we're most in favor of, yes? And then 2700K, we're in favor of it, and then you heard the suggestions around intensity, and I suspect that Public Works doesn't need specificity from us on that. You have enough information to take it forward, or do you need anything else from us on this?
Sorry, to clarify, is it, I have no knowledge in if it's better or worse to have brighter lighting while maneuvering boats at night? Is it harder to maneuver?
Yeah, I think at least for my opinion, it's best to be able to more easily pick out navigational
I see. Light. So bright lights might actually
make it harder to kind of focus on the lights that you're using for navigation.
That makes sense.
So, Erlen, do you have enough? What do you need from us in the way
of motion? Did you want to add a comment of preferring a galvanized material over painted black?
Yes, unless if it's kind of up to the commission, how the commission feels on that subject. That was my opinion. I'm open to anybody else's counter opinion, and I'm not 100% on that. I'm just leaning that way. It's just because most of the rest of our fixtures tend to be galvanized in town, and I tend to like personally things that are matchy samey, the technical term.
We may be limited to the material, but if you wanted a lighter shade of paint, that might be an option. But I don't know if that's
a lot of it was because scraping the poles of their stickers damages the poles, and I may be becoming too picky. I'm going to leave that one open. I don't know that we want to specify. It doesn't look like we want to specify.
I think your suggestion is a good one, worthwhile to investigate, I think. We'd like things that are less conspicuous as to wear over time. So.
I think that you guys have enough info to work from strength on this. You've heard what we said. And
we have. So just to confirm my notes here. So the recommendation is to go with the option number five, coach lantern for the Embarcadero and cloisters. As far as light, color, and intensity, as much as possible, no change in the cloisters. Keep it the same as what's there now. For the Embarcadero, the preference is 2700 Kelvin, the warmest light. As far as the light intensity, to really defer to the experts for navigation purposes on the best level of light.
The only thing I think I would say different is that the 2700K is for both locations, in my opinion,
okay.
Because it's typically what people like. It's a warmer, more comfortable light. Doesn't look so daylight. So I would say 2700K. Agree on that, yeah, in both locations.
All right, I think we got what we need.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you. So no motion necessary, right? We're just advisory.
No, exactly.
Okay. And so now we get a fun presentation from Cal Poly Regional Planning Department, Regional Design Studio. Welcome. And you're going to be showing us a waterfront master plan academic exercise. This is not just for the sake of our public out there watching on television. These are students from Cal Poly that are giving us their vision for our waterfront master plan idea in the Coleman Park and in the Tideland, the area north of the power plant and around the power plant out to the rock. So Erlen, if you want to introduce that subject.
Yeah, so I do have some introductory comments to make myself. Here we go. So I'm going to let the students come up to present, but before I do, I wanted to provide some background from my perspective. This has been, I think, a really rewarding, exciting experience to work with this Cal Poly class over the last academic quarter. So the way it went is we issued the request for proposals for the Waterfront Master Plan right around the time the last quarter started. It was around the end of February. And the Cal Poly professor, Ryan Stanwyck, reached out to me and had a fun idea where his students could practice being consultants by reviewing the city's actual real-world request for proposals and prepare responses, so to develop concept plans that are responsive to the request for proposals that we prepared. So after we issued the request for proposals, the students reviewed it. They put together some very rough preliminary concept plans. Our planning team met with them at the city library. We gave them a kind of presentation on the waterfront area and what we want to get out of a waterfront master plan, and answered any questions that they had, and then gave them some feedback on their initial preliminary concept plan designs. We then met with them a couple weeks later, and we actually interviewed the individual teams. And so as you'll hear, there were teams, the class formed around different sub-areas of the waterfront. And we used the exact same interview questions that we used for the actual consultants who proposed on the RFP to interview the students. So I think that was a great exercise for them to hear and respond to the types of questions that we actually asked in the real world of consultants, and I was really blown away. The students were very professional, had excellent answers, really took it seriously. They all did very, very well. And then most recently, these students presented their final concept plans. It was their final presentation. We actually put together a little panel that included a WMPAC member. Stephen Peck was on the panel, as well as our city planners, and Harbor Vitality Director Chris Munson was also on the panel, and we received the presentations and kind of critiqued and gave some feedback on the presentations. And then I invited them to also present their concepts here to the Planning Commission, because they were such a high quality, practically professional grade presentations. As you mentioned, Chair Meyer, it's really important to let the public know, anyone who's listening, that this is, although it happened concurrently with the RFP for the city's waterfront master plan, this is a completely separate, purely academic exercise that won't have any direct involvement in the actual waterfront master plan update process. Another point that I want to make is, I think a point of, I don't want to say frustration for the students, but I think they really would have liked to do a lot of community outreach and get community input in this process. And that's always a very exciting part of the planning process. But I requested that they don't do that, and that was just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding for the public where the exercise for the class is conflated with the actual waterfront master plan update. So the reason why there was no public involvement and there wasn't a lot of promotion of the Cal Poly exercise is just so it didn't create any confusion with the actual city waterfront master plan update process. So again, it was, I think, a really rewarding experience for us. I think I actually learned more about the city's waterfront just listening to their presentations and asking questions and having dialogue with the students, which worked out really well to have us as city staff kind of immersed in all of the nuances in every corner of the waterfront area to really prepare us for success for the actual waterfront master plan update. So again, it was a great opportunity for all of us, and I'm really happy that the students are here to give their presentation. So I will turn it over to the students. I'm not sure who the first speaker is, but I'll let you get up to the podium.
Welcome. And thank you.
Hello. Let me see. Okay, perfect. All right. So good evening, everyone. Thank you again, Erlen, for the introduction. That was really amazing. As you mentioned, we are incoming fourth years at Cal Poly under the City and Regional Planning Department. My name's Kalia Cruz.
My name's Sebastian Nielsen.
Awesome. And then we are just a couple students within our class, but we all wanted to share what we kind of collected and what we were thinking of for proposing for the potential development.
Perfect. And then overall, as I mentioned, we're incoming fourth years, and we just wrapped up our third year urban design studio, and we worked pretty closely with the community development team, which was really amazing. And this was kind of a really amazing hands-on experience for the class to really see what a professional working environment would feel like, what it feels like to act as a professional firm, kind of proposing to the city what we would like to develop. And as they mentioned, we were at the library a lot, and if we weren't meeting with the community development team, we were actually conducting site visits throughout the city to really see what it's like to experience the city and how people interact with it. And even though, as Erlyn mentioned, we were unable to conduct any type of community outreach, which we understand is very important since we are making this for the community members. This isn't something like a fun little project where we're like, oh, this would be cool. Like, we want to serve the community and really help the people that live here. But we were able to kind of potentially speak to some community members while we were doing these site visits to see what they thought of the area and how they, like, what they liked or maybe what they would like to see added. And overall, the main course kind of guidelines we had was really focusing on developing a specific plan. As we mentioned, we were focusing on the RFP waterfront master plan and really focusing on how we can apply urban design within these areas and also understanding how we can focus on bringing in research to really make informed decisions on how to develop the space. And as I mentioned before, we aren't really here just to make like fun little ideas. And sometimes you might kind of wonder why we bring in students. I feel like students are pretty notorious for having these really big dreams, and maybe they're not necessarily feasible, but they're always kind of fun to play with. And that's where the, again, community development team came really handy within the process to kind of reel us in and make, maybe point out issues with feasibility or kind of environmental concerns or policy issues that kind of conflict with our ideas, and then kind of applying this creativity where we could really emphasize how we can still have these big dreams or kind of how we can still accomplish the same goals while also considering maybe more feasible options. And again, as I mentioned, we were taking this very seriously. We wanted to understand the community, wanted to understand the city, so we conducted a good amount of literature review. As we mentioned before, a lot of us, we reviewed all the documents listed below, and we kind of divided this up throughout the entire class, and everyone shared information via presentations. And really, we wanted to apply this information within what we are conducting, especially focusing on the waterfront master plan, just to see how we can really develop the space and then, again, see what was maybe initially proposed and what we could also create in the space. And another great substitute for maybe public outreach was through former public outreach that's listed in Plan Morro Bay. And so really just pulling any information concerning environment or any type of policy and really just seeing what we can apply there. And next, we also conducted site inventory and analysis. So outside of policy and code, we were also focusing on other types of information we can find from the city, especially focusing on environmental aspects. I saw that this is pretty important throughout the city, as we saw you all discussing the light posts and how this would affect kind of marine species within the area. So we took a similar approach to that as well, pulling data from local, from state, from federal agencies, really to understand how what we could propose to build would affect kind of the natural environment within the area. And as you can see on the map here, it is the floodplain map. And we kind of modeled this through ArcGIS, which is gonna be like a map making type of program where you can pull in data and visualize it, as you see here. And then also, we're not just looking at environmental factors, but also kind of demographic information, economic information, and really to see not just the natural environment, but also the people we are serving as well, maybe like income levels or age groups, and really understanding what to put within the area. And as we were mentioning before, here's some evidence of us working with the community development team. On the left, it is gonna be the library where we're presenting our concept diagrams and really getting feedback to kind of help that iterative design process. Every time we received new information, it was really important to for each group to go back and kind of change each plan they had just to make sure we can make the best plan possible. And then also to the right, we have our mock interview, which was really amazing, where we had really a test of our knowledge of the Morro Bay, how we are gonna apply that knowledge to our plans, and then also how this plan would kind of respond to the RFP and actually cover what was mentioned in the waterfront master plan or any other documents. And then here we have the entire waterfront master plan divided into our five groups. Today we're gonna focus on Coleman Park and Morro Creek Campground, mainly because we see how there's been former proposed developments, for example, the battery plant and the power plant groups, which were mentioned in the Vista battery plant. So we kind of want to touch on new areas and propose some new ideas.
Hello, thank you very much for having us. My name is Sebastian. And Olivia and I tackled most of the project with our other two group members of Coleman Park. Yeah, and so for Coleman Park itself, a lot of our key design philosophy really centered around level rise and resiliency, making sure that any money that we do propose spending on the project would still be there and working for the community 20, 30 years later, climate change and any effects like that.
Pull your microphone up just a little. It's flexible.
Thank you. There you go. And making sure that Coleman Park right now feels a little bit underloved and a little bit like a space to move through, and just making sure that we turn into a space that you want to be, and that's not not just a transitory space. And I think our last main design core philosophy was to make sure that it is Coleman. That Coleman Park would be for everyone in the community and not just certain demographics, and adding, making sure it's for the youth and everyone. let's see if this works. There you go. So then moving on to our initial concept goals here, very boating oriented, very focusing on just packing as much activity into the site as possible. And we tried to add a lot of educational aspects, making sure we figured out spaces for the first Filipino landing sites, and the I believe it's the Salinas and Chumash tribes. Make sure we recognize that, because I believe at this time there's no cultural recognition for those tribes, especially for how culturally significant it is to them. And then moving on into our final site design, which I'll hand off to Olivia.
Hello, so welcome to the reimagined Coleman Park. We really focus on three things: people, play, and place. So at the very beginning of the site, that's where we have our most developed area. It's where our plaza is, where people can congregate and really just kind of tie up the very end of the Embarcadero. Then as we move through, we focus on both passive and active recreation opportunities, where we have pickleball courts, a dedicated playground, swing sets. As we know, we have the Coleman Park swing sets right now. We brought them back. And then also an educational trail. And then lastly, we really focus on ecological restoration. As you can see, we did move Coleman Drive up. It was in one, I believe the past Morro Bay Waterfront Master Plan had mentions of moving Coleman Drive up to get more recreation area and then also maybe make some dedicated space for ecological restoration. And so we wanted to see what that would actually look like if it came to fruition. And then also looking at the parking lot with the current sea level rise projections in your current sea level rise report, you have different parking lot designs given different sea level rise projections. And truly, it's going to be focusing on retreat. You have to, the suggestion really is to move the revetment back, maybe create an active dune in that area, and then also looking at condensing that parking lot while understanding that that parking lot does serve a large population of Morro Bay, but then also tourists coming in, and we understand that the city is really pro the parking lot. So how could we look at making sure that the function is still there, but also looking at just the different ecological aspects that we need to consider? Really quickly, Sebastian.
Again, so moving into a more section-by-section breakdown of our actual design, we'll start off with the very beginning with the old PG&E building, moving towards the intersection of Coleman Drive and the Embarcadero. You can see we have a perspective of what it could possibly look like in a section cut. But I'd say the main takeaways from this is making sure we have an entrance to Coleman Park, because right now at the end of the Embarcadero, it is very people focused and tourist focused, but also very very industrial focused, and making it getting people to come from the very tourist-heavy Embarcadero all the way to that endpoint of Morro Rock and making it feel inviting and like an actual entrance to the park. And some of the ways that we did that was by paving over with more decorative dyed blue concrete in the shape of waves. As you can see to the top left of the little one on the top there. Improving access to the public beach launch or the public kayak beach launch through a ramp for ADA access, as well as stairs for more easy access. Keeping some of the short term and long term parking, because it is an aspect of the city that you have to keep, especially for public boaters coming in and unloading their equipment. And then finally, to improve safety and circulation in general, switching to a small roundabout for the intersection of Coleman Drive and the Embarcadero.
Yeah. That roundabout consideration was also made with the understanding that our teammates in our class decided to create a vehicular road going all the way to, I believe it's a Atascadero Road on the other side, rather than just keeping that for pedestrians and bicyclists. So that roundabout was to help with the increased traffic that that road would create. We also, the decommissioned building that's currently at the very end of the Embarcadero, we worked with our teammates, and Cal Poly has been looking for some rowing boat storage in that area. So we made that building kind of the boat storage. And so the ramp right now is just to provide access to both the Cal Poly rowing team and then also any kayakers or boaters in this area to be able to easily launch their boats into the bay. And then, as you can see, we also separated the pedestrian and the bicyclist pathways. We put the bicyclists closer to the roadway and really wanted to focus on safe pedestrian travel throughout Coleman Park. So as we move into our second section where we really focus on recreation, you can see the pickleball courts and the playground. We implemented these cool seating structures on the actual bay to increase access to the bay, where it's kind of a stepped structure. And this will also help with sea level rise as it's adaptable to the different tide levels that are in the bay at different moments. And people can access them, and it'll just be a really great recreational experience. And we also have the swing sets on the back of these steps. And this is the area where a lot of the eelgrass is, so a lot of the otters are congregating here. And we realized during site visits that a lot of people would just sit on the side of the pedestrian pathway, and there wasn't really a dedicated spot to go and view these otters, which are such an iconic part of Morro Bay. So we decided to kind of create these different viewing points for them. And in the back on this section, you can see we have an elevated walkway. So this area, as we get into the educational trail, would be regained. Currently, that is completely cut off by Coleman Drive. And so with gaining that space back, we didn't want to in turn like hurt habitat life or just take their land for us and like our needs. So instead we put an educational trail back there where we'd have different educational signs explaining the species, either plant or wildlife in the area, and really create something where people are coming to Morro Bay not just for the rock or not just for the amazing Embarcadero, but also to learn about the culture here and the animals and just the estuary and like what makes Morro Bay ecologically so special. And then very lastly, as we move to the last part of the site, we get into the re-envisioned parking lot and the ecological restoration area. Right now, this parking lot from different parking studies you all have has around 380 parking spots. We were able to condense it space-wise, but still offer around 330 parking spots just by really looking at the circulation and how we can get people in and out of there the easiest way in the least amount of space. We did keep it dirt because after speaking with Erlyn and the different teams, we heard that you were considering putting some paid parking over there and then also paving it. And instead of paving the parking lot, just because it is, there are so many species in that area, we don't want them to get hurt. And with putting like impervious pavements over there, you're gonna get issues with stormwater runoff and just different things. So by keeping it dirt, but implementing a pay station, we can use the revenue that's generated from the pay station to help with maintenance of that dirt lot and just ensure that it is a good experience for all who are coming. We also have a short-term and an ADA parking area right across from the pay station. And this is for people who are dropping off their kids or dropping off their different beach supplies for the day before wanting to go and park somewhere else. In our plans originally, we had additional parking at the power plant site and then also the proposed battery plant site. So there were some opportunities that don't exist right now for long-term parking if you weren't parking at the base of the rock. And then we also, we know that you host different festivals there, and so we kind of created a paved plaza area for those booths and maybe food trucks to come in and really activate that shoreline before the revetment right there while still moving the revetment back. And then otherwise, we, for the rest of the parking lot area that we now didn't need, we made that an ecological restoration area, where we can really focus on just ensuring that any animals here are taken care of the best as possible. And we also made our celebration site for the Salinan and the Chumash people. Moro Rock was really, really special to them. And so we figured that in this area, we could have something where it's kind of framing Moro Rock and some narrative can be said about those two tribes and just the importance of that rock. Granted, we would have to talk with both of these tribes to understand how they would best want to be represented on site, but it's just an idea of what area that could possibly happen. And then we also lastly have a little lookout point just framing the view, not towards Moro Rock, but towards the downtown Embarcadero area. We think personally that that's a really underutilized view and that it's really something that Moro Bay should cherish, not just the rock, but also the city. So we made a little spot for people to kind of relax and look out. And then at the very end, we just have a pedestrian walkway that is going around the rock to, I believe it's like, you guys have like an ecological restoration area, like beach almost on the other side of the rock. And we wanted to make sure that people can still access it, still get close to the rock, but maybe just not in their cars. And yes, otherwise, yeah, thank you so much. And that is Coleman Park, maybe.
Oh boy. Thank you for having us. This is very special, very kind of you. So we're just gonna jump right into it. Fundamentally, oh, my name is Ben, by the way. Fundamentally, one experiences a city. But after being here for, I'd say roughly the past 10 weeks, what my group, the Moro Creek Campground Group, discovered, realizes that Moro Bay is not a place that you just experience. It is one that you remember. And in fact, the first memory I have when I moved from Utah to California is of Moro Bay. Back when I was around 10, I remember seeing the big rock and the smokestacks and just sort of being enamored with the ocean. And that is a magic that we wanted to encapsulate in our design, as well as maintaining other things, other fun statistics like TOT, which comes from the hotels, as well as the RV park that is right on the shore. Same with Lilac Kaiser Park, Flippos, and then we wanted to refurbish the old wastewater treatment plant. So, if we look over here at the Moro Creek Campground, you'll see the initial designs. So there were quite a few. Erlyn might remember mine. It was quite destructive originally, replacing almost the entire area with a amusement park. That did not move forward. and I'm glad it didn't, because our design we have right now is much better than what I originally had envisioned. So over here, what we're looking at is an idea for a sort of tiered campground. And we took a lot of inspiration from Flying Flags over at Avila, which has a nice gradient of going from like biking camping to little yurts, all the way up to luxury RVs. And we wanted to give people more options of what they could experience in Moro Bay through camping there while maintaining the TOT. And this is my design, or this is our final design. And you'll notice that we also have, in addition to all of our little camp spots, up there are bungalows. And that is a new resort that we have planned in this exercise. And then looking further to your, say, well, for me, it's my right. You'll see Lilac Kaiser Park. We kept the park. We expanded the playground. And we also added a nice little pergola slash picnic area on the most west border of the park. And then you'll notice that Flippo's got a bit of a makeover. That was my little passion project here. And we will get to that in a second. But first, let's take a look at the Morrill Creek Campground. This was a render we made using a program called Lumion. Erlyn and the members of OnePack that were at the initial meeting we had last week, they got to experience that in VR. We rendered it in VR. So you can see here that we're preserving the sort of RV park aesthetic whilst making it a bit more modern and still keeping the same amount of people that would be able to be served in the RV park in our current design. Here's another view of that. You'll see we have the RVs, a nice view, a nice pedestrian view of Morrill Rock there in the background. Moving along, here is the view of the new revitalized Flippo's. You'll see we have a big mini golf course there, and that was something we discovered during research, that there used to be a mini golf course on the other side of the street that Flippo's is on. And we wanted to continue that and give something for both tourists, the high schoolers that are right there, and locals, something to experience. And then that is all we have for the Morrill Creek Campground. We would all like to thank you so much for giving us the time to present here. It really does mean the most to you, so thank you.
Thank you all. Commissioners, would you like comments or thoughts?
I thought it was great. Thank you guys so much for your ideas. I hope that I'm excited to see what Place Work learns from your ideas here. Hopefully they're paying attention. And if I see blue pavers in the shape of a wave, hopefully you guys at least get like a good internship out of it.
Yeah, I really like the Coleman Park area as well as the Flippo's area. I think all of that design, all of the elements that are in the proposed design is very appropriate for this area. Should be focused more on the natural environment and recreational opportunities and spending time with people outdoors. So I really like it.
I actually have a few questions, two questions. One is, how can we get roller skating back to Flippo's? I did that as a kid, and I'd love to see it in that area again, rollerblading, I guess, roller skating. But more seriously, I'm actually wondering about the Coleman Park design. Something I don't know about is how people with limited physical abilities get their toes in the sand and get their feet in the water. And I'm wondering if you guys considered, like, how do we get a wheelchair and a walker down to the water in the sand? And so I don't know if you have comments on that or if that was something that you guys thought about, but I know it's kind of can be a struggle now to get all the way down to the beach in a wheelchair, so.
Commissioner King, while the students are thinking about if they have a response to that, I just want to mention, I think that's a really great example of the benefit of this exercise is that it generates those types of questions for us that we know we're gonna wanna consider when we actually prepare the actual waterfront master plan update. So that's just a good example. We had a lot of those moments where like, oh yeah, yeah, we wanna make sure the plan is considering, you know, this point or this issue.
Yeah. So ADA accessibility and just accessibility for everyone, accessibility for everyone was a major part of our project. Actually, when I went down to the very end of Coleman Park, I noticed people would leave their strollers up on the actual road itself at the very, very end, and then they would go down, which is obviously something you don't want to see people doing. It means that they're just not able to access in the way they'd like to. So I think in our design itself, in the very beginning, adding the ADA ramp by the public boat launch was one of our big ones. But making sure, I think we the bathroom by the parking lot, we decided to expand it and add a lifeguard shed, which would also have the the beach wheelchairs with those very big yellow wheels that residents could rent out or could just borrow. We would hope that would add to ADA accessibility. And yeah, in general, just making sure we do add ramps and some sort of structure to get down to all the small beaches, because they're very, very well used, and especially for the amount that they're designed at the moment. So just making sure we have all that accessibility was a very big priority for us. Yeah.
That's cool. I've never heard of those wheelchairs, and I've been the person leaving the stroller up, and climbing with an infant down those rocks is worth it, but precarious. So thanks for that.
I just want to thank you for just a wealth of really imaginative and good ideas. And it's also, you know, very reassuring that what I see, the enthusiasm and the thoughtfulness that you bring to making things better for everybody. It's really remarkable in these stressful times to see that kind of value displayed. Thank you.
I always like these exercises because it opens everybody's minds, and so for me, I try to absorb as much as possible. I'm just a sponge being quiet. But so the things I took away that I'll be remembering as we go forward are specifically the celebration of the indigenous cultures that you described, the all modes, all ages, and all incomes discussion, kind of in line with people, place, and play. For me, anyway, I heard that kind of together. I really like the viewing terraces. I liked what you said about the viewing terraces, about being accessible. And I remember in some other planning book somewhere, I saw a set of ramps that went, there was a staircase, but then this ramp that went ziggy, zaggy, ziggy up the staircase, and it allowed ADA folks to get. And so I was just sort of playing in my head around that combination of ideas. And then I really liked the What Makes Morro Bay Special Trail, talking about the little special views, the little special creatures, or whatever it is, but some sort of list, something that kids could kind of explore, almost like an exploratorium. And along with that, I like that you don't just experience Morro Bay, but you remember it. That could be a tagline for our chamber. You know, that's a nice little statement. I like the viewing lookouts when you're back at the rock and looking back, like you were saying, looking back over the city, or the various little vignettes. Those are really fun. The tiered campground idea, focusing on the creek, you didn't really talk about that, but to my eye, it looked like the campground is focusing down on the creek more than it does now, and that really brings the wildness of the creek pathway up into the campground, and just reorienting those, the way those rows work, for lack of a better word. I like the expanded play area at Lilac Kaiser Park, too. I'm bummed I didn't see a pump track, though, for skateboarders and bicycles. You missed out. That's probably one of the big ideas that got pitched. But maybe we do that around Flippo's. He, the owner of that, lives near me. Thank you all. Do we have any questions from the public on that discussion that anyone want? No?
So, Mr. Chair, I would like to also thank the students again for the presentation. You can see they have a very impressive graphic skills with the presentation, and just also a reminder again for the listening public, nothing is being proposed. This is really just a collection of ideas from Cal Poly students, some of them very creative ideas that may be carried forward at some point in the Waterfront Master Plan, but really this is just an academic exercise, a collection of ideas, and we really appreciate the students' work on this.
Yeah, it's really fun to have Cal Poly so accessible to us as a small town. It's we get a bunch of creative people. Thank you. Do we have any comments from essentially closing that item out then? Any comments, Erlen, from Community Development Director?
Yeah, so I do have just a few comments. So first I wanted to echo the comments of council members and the rest of the commission, thanking Commissioner King for your service on the Planning Commission. I'm very happy I got to work with you for a year. Really appreciate your focus on housing, affordable housing, and as other people have noted, just the next generation of Morro Bay residents. So thank you for your service, and good luck in Los Osos, and hope we still see you around in Morro Bay. few other items. So waterfront master plan, the waterfront master plan advisory committee, which Commissioner Wachowski is a member of, had their first meeting on June 5th. The purpose of that meeting was really just an initial introductory report that I gave on the waterfront master plan. And we also had the WOMPAC review place works contract. And that contract was approved by the city council last Tuesday to update the waterfront master plan. Tomorrow, we actually have a pre-kickoff meeting with the consultant team. So we're getting started and getting to put the agenda together for the July 3rd WOMPAC meeting. Besides that, my only other update is regarding short-term rentals. So we actually have a short-term rental update scheduled for the city council agenda for next Tuesday, the 24th. And that staff report package will be available this Thursday online. And that concludes my updates.
I think before we close, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to publicly honor Terry Simon, passed away recently. Terry spent a whole year with us at the Planning Commission, 2024. Every single meeting he was at, every single Planning Commission meeting, wrote into every single agenda packet with comments, extensive comments and in-depth time and energy invested in the city of Morro Bay and into the planning that went on here. And he provided a lot of education for us and a lot of really great input and a lot of playing devil's advocate and the real contribution to our city as a resident. And I just want to remember him and say that I am grateful for the time he spent as an honorary planning commissioner.
Yeah, his experience was very helpful in so many ways. Sometimes we argued, sometimes we agreed, but it was always interesting. And he was a good guy. So with that, I will close out tonight's Planning Commission meeting. Do we have a date for the next meeting?
I believe the next regular meeting would be July 1st. However, that meeting is going to be canceled.
For tonight, we're
right.
We're done.
So for the next regular schedule is July 1st. Okay. Yes.
So that closes out. Thank you all. Have a good evening. And thank you, Cal Poly.